The Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live.
Now here's John Wilner, nationally syndicated columnist, of course, covering all things college football, knows all, tells all, inside and out. Let's start with this, the weekend, and what happened with Texas, and what happened with USC, and what happened with Nebraska, and I can go on and on and on.
Yes.
What were your thoughts of the weekend, John?
Well, what happened with USC is the same thing we've seen with USC three previous times. The Trojans have now blown fourth quarter leads in four Big Ten games. They're 1-4. Every loss, they've blown a lead late, and they've found new and creative ways to do that. One game, they kind of got hosed by the refs at Minnesota. Another game at Michigan, they couldn't tackle. Penn State, they couldn't defend a tight end. And now, boy, that was something else. They're ahead by 6 at Maryland, 2 minutes left, attempting a 41-yard field goal that would basically ice the game. It gets blocked. Maryland returns it to midfield. Maryland scores the go-ahead touchdown. USC can't get in field goal range. Another 3,000-mile flight back home after a loss. This is the reality the Trojans signed up for. The problems are not just on defense. They're also on offense. Lincoln Riley under the gun. They are under 500. Getting into a bowl game now is the big question. Forget about the playoff. Forget about contending in the Big Ten. The question now is whether USC can even get into a bowl game.
No, I think the question is who's going to be the next coach of USC next year. I know.
Yeah, well, there's. I'm sure that's.
We talked about it last week about the buyout and all that stuff. Yeah. But I know this to be true about USC big cigar alums. We're the Trojans, okay?
Yes.
We don't go through this. And whatever the check is, we'll write the check. We'll put the moving vans in front of his beautiful mansion that he was showing off just a couple of years ago. We'll do whatever it takes to get him out of here, John.
Yeah, there are some that think like that. There's no doubt. They have a new athletic director, Jen Cohen from Washington, who did not hire Riley. So he's working. Technically, she's his boss. He's working for her. USC still has the same president, Carol Folt, who has a lot of capital invested in Lincoln Riley. Ultimately, she's the one who's going to make the call. I think the wheels are going to have to come off, meaning 4-8 before they make a change. If they get
Maryland, John, the wheels are off. It's Maryland.
I think there's a couple of wheels off, not all of them. They are not yet crashing and burning with their underbelly exposed to the asphalt. There are a couple losses away from that. If they get 7-5, 6-6, they'll keep him, and next year will be a must-win year for him.
So we're starting to see, and these aren't big programs, right? But there were a couple of head coaching moves. East Carolina was one. So the dominoes are falling in October.
Yeah, Southern Miss, yep.
This was the other one, right. Okay, so you start to look around the landscape, and I think at the beginning of the year, we felt like, well, BYU is going to make a change. Obviously, I was dead flat wrong on that because they're
under. We all were, yeah.
Okay, but you look around and say at Florida at the start of the year, dead man walking. Well, Billy's still hanging in there, and at the start of the year as well, Jed Fish, Florida tie-in. Well, now you start looking at Kalen DeBoer. Because I know this to be true about Alabama Crimson Tide people. They're crazy.
Yes, and they are.
A lot of money. And so what'd you make out of Alabama losing?
Well, first of all, I think Billy Napier still is going to get fired. Did you ever see that movie Weekend at Bernie's where the corpse is like upright and they make it seem like the corpse is alive? Yeah. I think Napier's like that. And Florida's stretch run schedule is absolutely brutal. He's going to get fired.
Right.
The DeBoer situation, interesting. Anybody who knows anything about college football could see this coming, that there was going to be a step back at Alabama, that they weren't going to be 11-1, 12-1. And so the question is 9-3, 8-4, somewhat predictable, especially with the schedule. I don't see any way that he gets fired, to be honest. I mean, they've got too much invested political capital. The athletic director, Greg Byrne, university president, the system president for the university, way too much invested. They won't. I don't think there's any way they're going to make a move. You know, they lost a close game at Tennessee. The Vanderbilt upset was bad. They're still in the playoff hunt. And they did beat Georgia. Let's not forget. They're still in the playoff hunt. If they lose one more time, then Alabama becomes a case study for how this new playoff looks system is going to be. A three-loss SEC team, do they get in as an at-large? Bama will be the big test. But I, again, I don't see, unless they like lose out, there's no way they're going to make a change. But certainly, the heat is on. Everybody knew this was going to be the case. It's like Alabama lost their immunity. Saban gave them an immunity to the transfer portal, to NIL, to losing to Vanderbilt. And those kind of games, they didn't worry about. They were the only program in the country that didn't have to worry about all that because Saban was so different and kids wanted to play for him even if they weren't getting as much NIL money. Now, Alabama has been cast down to the masses. They're experiencing all the other problems everybody has experienced for the last 20 years. How are they dealing with it? Not very well, but it's the reality.
John Wilner with us for a few minutes. Wilner Hotline, all things inside college football. And of course, John, you can read him nationally. He's on our site as well. You look at Georgia, Texas. Were you surprised that Georgia was just able to jack stomp Texas on their home turf? Or is Georgia that much better? Is there that much parity? Because Georgia didn't look great at times of season.
They've looked bored at times. They've played three game high-level games. Clemson on neutral field, Alabama on the road, Texas on the road. 12 quarters. For, I'd say, 10, they've looked like the best team in the country. The first half at Alabama, clearly they got overwhelmed. I was surprised that they dominated the line of scrimmage the way they did. I mean, their defensive ends were phenomenal in that game. They totally collapsed the pocket on a regular basis. Quinn Ewers, Arch Manning, no rhythm, no time. To me, that was the dominant piece in that whole game was Georgia's ability to get pressure off the edges consistently. When they are on their game and they are engaged and they're feeling urgency, I think part of it, they were an underdog. It was the first time they've been an underdog in like 3 years. And you know that Kirby Smart mentioned that every day last week. When they're on their game, they are the best team because they've got the best quarterback and lines of scrimmage. But they haven't been on their game every quarter. And so we'll see. They still got to play Tennessee. They still play, I think they play either LSU or Florida. Oh, they certainly play Florida. So we'll see. But they are awfully good when they want to be.
I have to tell you, I'm a little annoyed with Kirby Smart. I get annoyed when coaches do the, nobody believed in us.
Well, sure.
The media is evil and all that nonsense. I mean,
well, clearly Kirby did not read the hotline last week because I did pick Georgia to win the game straight up. But he was right in that they were cast in an underdog role that they have not experienced in 3 years. So from that perspective, you know, I kind of agree. The other thing about that game that should resonate with Pac-12 fans is the absolute catastrophe that was the officiating. You know, they overturned a call after Texas fans threw all those bottles on the field. They had time to think about it. You know what? I think we did get that wrong, actually. That should never have happened. And now the SEC is dealing with an officiating controversy that usually the Pac-12 would have had to deal with in years past. I'm sure that lots of fans could think, oh, yeah, we've seen that kind of show before, different details, but the same kind of absolute breakdown. Now, if Georgia had lost by a touchdown, then the SEC would be like a DEFCON zero situation for them. But as it was, certainly a relatable situation for longtime Pac-12 fans.
Let's bring it into Arizona and Arizona State. John stole my line before we started chatting
about. I did not mean to.
I was stretching my hamstring out to kick. Kenny Dillingham overstepped his bounds, in my opinion, showed his immaturity as a head coach. At 34 years of age, everybody likes to talk about that, and there are times where Kenny steps in it. I think he stepped in it. think he was dead flat wrong to call out a kicker who, by the way, that same kicker kicked three field goals to beat Mississippi State. Without that kicker, they don't beat Mississippi State. Kickers go into funks. Kickers go into ruts. What did you make out of Kenny Dillingham's explosion after the game?
I did agree that he overstepped his bounds. And I actually think, on the whole, given the circumstances he inherited, all the difficulties, his inexperience as a head coach, I think for the most part, he's done very well avoiding those kind of traps. But he did, he made the cardinal mistake is getting emotional in front of the cameras. And that's what happened to him. It was okay to do it in the mosh pit after the Utah game on the field, right? When they've just won the game. But that was, he did kind of tread into cardinal sin territory there after the Cincinnati game. They missed two field goals fourth quarter. They missed, you know, they missed a few. What are they, 7 out of 13? But between both kickers, they're 7 out of 13 field goals this season. I get his frustration. You can't do that. He did take to social media to apologize. The real, you know, fence mending has got to obviously happen behind the scenes with his kicker. They have got to build that kicker back up emotionally after what's happened. They are having tryouts. I assume he has moved forward with the tryouts. I mean, you're on the front lines there in Tempe, and they've got a bye this week. But they're in a difficult situation. And I would say it's secondary to the quarterback issue, right? I mean, if they don't get Levitt back soon, they have got other problems, and the kicking will just compound the situation.
Okay, is it as bad in Tucson as it is in Arizona?
Woo!
I know.
Boy.
I mean, look, John, if I'm sitting here, I don't care about ASU or U of A one way or the other, okay? I really don't. But if I don't look at ASU and say, hey, guys, would you take 5-2 at the same week? And, oh, by the way, you're one win away from a bowl game in year two where Kenny inherited the worst program in America because of the scandal that was going on behind the scenes, and that's a fact. Meantime, in Tucson, you lose your coach. You have some players that I have to start wondering aloud if T-Mac is going to keep playing. The same thing with Fifita. Same thing with some of these seniors looking at the NFL, John. I mean, that's a train wreck.
It is heading off the cliff. Quickly, that they were completely overrun by Colorado. I do think it was a bad matchup. Colorado is all about the passing game. They got a lot of really good receivers, and Arizona has a lot of injuries in the secondary. So from that standpoint, it was a bad matchup personnel-wise. But there's also plenty of other things going wrong with Arizona on offense. I think it starts with Fifita. There is just something not right. Now, I don't know how much of it is Fifita himself. In other words, he would be in this situation even if Jed Fish had stayed. And I don't know how much of it is the fact that he is playing for a new head coach, new playbook, new coordinator, all that kind of thing. You know, Brock Huard, I thought, is a very sharp analyst for Fox, former Washington quarterback, former NFL quarterback. And he talked about how he's seen a difference in Fifita in terms of putting pressure on himself to carry the weight. Whereas last year, he didn't have to carry the weight. He was the backup who became the starter, and everything was easy and there was no pressure. There's pressure this year, preseason pressure on the team, pressure on him, pressure on his buddy McMillan to perform. And you can tell he hasn't been the same guy. I think some of that would have happened even if Jed Fish were there. Regardless, the reality is they are 3-4. They looked terrible. And you do wonder if Brent Brennan is going to be able to get the ship righted in time to at least salvage a postseason bid. They got to win three more to get a bowl bid. And it's crazy how the scripts have flipped
right
along the along I-5 there, right? I'm talking about California. I-10.
Yes.
I-10, yes. I have made that trip many times. Because ASU, we figured, would be somewhere where Arizona is, and Arizona, we figured, would have been somewhere where ASU is. ASU still has a chance to get in the Big 12 title game. Unlikely with two losses, but in that conference, anything can happen.
Okay, yeah, let me get over to the Big 12 before I get you out of here. A couple other things. When you look at the Big 12 today, we mentioned it earlier, nobody had BYU sitting there undefeated, but nobody had Iowa State either, John. And
yeah,
I haven't seen much of Iowa State. And when you look at undefeated teams, now that we're coming into, what is it, the end of October, and there's a team like Pitt who's sitting there undefeated. And I've got to watch Pitt play this week because, you know, I've not seen them yet. You have a game like Boise State and UNLV, which is huge
yep.
playoff. That's outside of the Big 12. We'll get over to that in a second. But if you look at the Big 12, John, who jumps out at you right now?
Well, George Orwell would be proud, I think, Brad, because it's like 1984 all over again with BYU, right? They're the 40th anniversary of their only national title. And here they are, one magic moment after another. That was an incredible come-from-behind victory. Last gasp drive. They're at fourth and seven or something. They convert, then they score on a 35-yard pass to beat Oklahoma State. They're undefeated. Sitake started the season on the hot seat. They were picked, I believe, 13th in the Big 12 preseason poll. Here they are, 7-0. And you look at their schedule, they got a decent chance to get to 12-0, believe it or not. It's amazing. The Big 12 generally is each your own. The Pac-12 was like that for many years in the late 2010s. Anything can happen. Iowa State had to pull a kind of a grand escape itself to stay undefeated. They're very well coached. They got a good quarterback in Rocco Brecht. I like Iowa State. I think they're going to be the last team standing. But you have got to say BYU looks a little bit like a team of destiny. It is amazing what is going on there. Tip the hat to Kalani Sitake. He has done a great job.
If I had told you at the start of the year one of two teams in the state of Utah is going to be undefeated, you would not have given me the blue and white.
No, I wouldn't. And if you had told me that one or two teams in the state of Arizona is going to be 5-2, I would not have given you the pitchfork either. It's similar ways the two scripts have flipped in those states.
Friday night, Boise State, UNLV. On the surface, unless you're a total college football fan like you and I, Boise State, UNLV is huge for the CFP.
It is. It's also huge for the Heisman. Ashton Gentry, Boise State's phenomenal tailback, on pace to break Barry Sanders' record. So a lot of people will be tuning in to see him play specifically. But yeah, UNLV, one loss, just one at Oregon State. Really good team. Even they're still rolling even after their starting quarterback bailed because he wasn't getting enough NIL money. Clearly, the coaching staff figured, you know what, we'll be fine without you. They're good. Boys, they're playing on a short week. They played at Oregon State Saturday. Now they got a Friday night game. Meanwhile, Boise had a bye, extra time to prepare. Boise, one loss at Oregon. So the losing team here is not necessarily out of it. The losing team can still win the Mountain West, get in the Mountain West Championship, win the Mountain West title, and get in the playoff. However, the winning team is going to have a big advantage in all of that. And I think Boise will end up winning this thing. Boise has got, as I will be writing today, and people will be able to read on your site, Boise actually has got a path to get one of the top four seeds and dislodge the Big 12.
Wow.
It's going to take a certain series of events. But if Boise finishes 12-1 and that only loss is by 3 points at Oregon, that's a pretty darn good resume. And it might be a better resume than the Big 12 champ has. So we'll see how it plays out. But yeah, Mountain West in the national spotlight, which is great. And then Saturday morning, we got group of five, right? Mountain West, Friday night, Saturday morning, the game you got to watch, Brad.
Yeah.
Navy, Notre Dame. Navy is unbeaten. So it's the first time since 1960 that Navy and Army are both ranked at the same time. This is the second straight week it's happened. Both teams undefeated. It's the first time they've both been undefeated since 1945. If Navy beats Notre Dame, we're going to be talking about Navy as a playoff team, as unbelievable as that sounds. And it also gets into this whole set of complications that Army and Navy's, their game is after the playoff announcement. They could end up playing for the AAC title the day before the announcement and then play their regular game again the following week. It would be like, I don't think society is ready for that. I really do not.
Chaos. We love.
It's not just chaos. Service Academy chaos.
Yeah, that's
the best kind. We have, I mean, it's incredible. They're both undefeated. And Navy beat Memphis is good. And Army's resume is not very good. But Navy beat Memphis, and Memphis is good. I think Navy's got a real chance against Notre Dame. That would be incredible. And the game is at a neutral site, too. It's not in South Bend. So they got a real chance. And then when Notre Dame plays Army, that's also, I think the Navy game is in Giant Stadium. And then the Army game, I think, is at Yankee Stadium. So they both got a shot.
It's what makes John Wilner so great. The passion.
Oh, what a.
Him. He could.
Vanderbilt's ranked. Army and Navy are ranked. The world is turned upside down. It's like the song in Hamilton.
John Wilner with us, as always. Appreciate the time. Thanks.
Thanks, Brad.
And we're back with more after this timeout. All right, this week on the Recruiting Roundup, Claudia is off, but Cody, of course, is here. Cody Cameron delivers, drops knowledge, delivers the goods. I wanted to chop it up with you. I'm going to start like at a 30,000-foot level. Letter of Intent Day is about 2 months, less than 2 months away. Are you finding this, Cody, to be a very deep class in Arizona for 2024?
I don't think surface level, like Division One, so to speak, and especially compared to some of the classes we've had in the last 5 years, Brad. But in terms of numbers, you know, our own Chris Seaton does a great job of looking at numbers and the depth of our classes. And every year that mountain peak gets a little higher. And so I just look at the more and more D3s and D2s that come into the state of Arizona, the more kids that go. So to answer your question, the first one in December, that's signing day. Probably not a huge number that we've seen the last 5 or 10 years, but that secondary one in February just seems like it's growing every single year. And that's so much credit to the high school football coaches and the kids academically understanding, hey, not just my game on Fridays, but getting my work done in the classroom opens doors for opportunities. And so we're doing a great job of that in the state of Arizona.
No question about that. And we like that first and foremost. When you look around the landscape this year, and I'm going to get specific, players that you're looking at in the next 6 to 8 weeks that haven't said, hey, this is where I'm going to go, you have a couple off the top of your head that you could throw the fans way to say, yeah, keep an eye on this one.
Yeah, I think when you it's interesting because you look at like Chandler Unified, right? And for years, there's always been top players in the state. We have those still. We have a couple D1 guys, but a name like Rich Lucero, quarterback at Hamilton High School, who I was so high on earlier this year. Well, hey, you know, Hamilton, they had a little bit of growing pains, a new offensive coordinator too, and just a new system, right? Just like at any level, that takes a little bit of time. Lucero looked incredible last week in Hamilton's big win over Perry. I mean, he lit it up, and he's had a really good season. This is a kid where I think attention can come a little later. It's not, hey, these big power four names that we've seen every single year, but it's a quarterback that I truly believe in, who's kind of figuring out that system. And the great thing about playing the Premier Region, Brad, is every single week you play a top team in the state. And so that film looks really, really good when you continue to put games like this. And the farther you go in the playoffs, the more eyes will be on you. And I really believe in Rich, especially in that Premier Region. So that's a name where people might go, yeah, you know, but he's not the DeMond Williams and all that, but I think he's really, really talented. And the more eyes on him, I think people would, hey, that's a player.
And I saw him in week one against Centennial. And from what I saw, just a little bit of the highlights the other night, it does look like he's come a long ways. As you mentioned, they had a change in coordinator and coach there. I saw Chandler the other night in person, gave them the eyeball test. I hadn't seen them much, talked to Rick Gerritsen before the game. And he kind of shrugged his shoulders about where they are. Where do you think Chandler is? Because the conversation, Cody, has been, and this does involve recruiting, the conversation has been, look over at the west side and look at where Liberty is and everybody else is a notch or two below. When you look at Chandler, what do you see this season?
I think they had a non-region schedule that did not help them. And I truly think it. And yeah, the wins are there, but heck, they're hurting in power points because of it right now. And I think when they had to play Liberty – midway through the year after playing four teams that weren't very strong, Brad, I think really hurt them because they're so talented still. And Chandler's coaching staff is amazing. Like Rick Gerritsen's one of, and not only is a good friend, he's an incredible football coach. He's got great football coaches around him. But you're exactly right. It's not a Chandler team that has 10 Division I kids. It's not what that is. They have really good football players. And it is hard to replicate game reps, even if you have good talent at practice. It's just tough to do. So when you have that schedule, Liberty dominated that football game, you know, and then they go in. They've had their struggles this year with that, and Highland beat them as well. But I think that team can turn a corner. The reason being, Tristan Halsana, their senior running back, is an absolute stud. He's a bulldozing running back, maybe not the true breakaway speed that we've seen of Chandler backs in the game, but they get that running back going. They're tough to beat. They dominate the time of possession with that. Coach Gerritsen's so smart. And so I really do think it's a team that still can compete with Hamilton and Basha. I just want to see if that corner's totally turned. It looks like it was turned against versus Castile. So we'll see if it continues throughout the rest of the year.
Cody Cameron with us for a couple of minutes. You can also hear Cody over on 1580, the Fanatic Friday night recap of the high school games. He drops knowledge every Friday night. On the radio side, if you want to follow Cody, of course, you can get to him as well on social media. I have a question overarching for the fans watching you saying, okay, this guy is clearly plugged in. This guy clearly has knowledge. But my kid is a D1 kid, and he's going to go to USC, and he's going to go to Notre Dame. And the only way that they're going to get to USC or Notre Dame is if they buy a ticket, in my opinion. Okay, Cody? Yeah. Seeing the change in philosophy, we refer to it off the top, of players, we're not going to have a whole lot of signings in December. Are you seeing the trend as I'm seeing, or maybe I'm wrong, correct me, it's better to go to a smaller program, work your way up, then go in the portal, and that's not being loyal to your school, but we've seen it enough now in the last 2-3 years that is the roadmap to take. Please go to some place to get on the field, compete first and foremost, get your education, but go somewhere, get on the field, and then if you're good enough, they're going to come after you.
Brad, it's the new road, right? And me and you always talk about it. If you have the D1 bust mentality right now, you're screwed. I mean, that's truly what it is. You need to open up your horizon. And if you want to play college football and you want to be at the D1 level, that's the new JUCO route. You know, go to a D2 or D3 financially. I understand that it's more, maybe more of a burden. That's why grades are so important more than ever right now. But you get yourself on the field, you have tremendous film, and then a D1 is going to look at you 100% because the portal's here, you know, and you've made a great point about this the last 6 to 12 months. Like, whether you like it or not, it is here in college football. It's here to stay. I look at NAU. That's a D2 staff, and they took a ton of D2 kids from Pitt State that those coaches coached prior, and they're having a tremendous season. Their defense is the best that I've seen in the last 8 to 10 years. That is the new roadmap. D2 and D1, yes, there's a jump. It's usually up in size in the trenches, but if you can play at that level, especially the skill position, you can probably make your way in the D1 and elevate your game as well. So that's a great way to get there if you don't initially have that opportunity in high school football.
Cody Cameron dropping knowledge on the recruiting roundup. Thanks.